Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video. In the dark, I play my dreams. Purple coats and flows like sweet streams. I'm the daddy with the know-how seed. Great in the world like it's meant to be. I'm a coach of B.I.O.B. I'm the king. Back in love in everything. Bring a change, making it last.
Welcome to episode 370 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where pimp stands for permaculture is my passion. The only pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. Oh yeah, good to be here with y'all. Okay. This episode, as always, brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com. Turn that simp into a pimp. Bam! All right, y'all, I'm going to handle all the business up front. In fact, I'm going to leave out some of my advertisers because I got a guest on that I had on before, and I don't want to interrupt him when he's in a flow because my man is the goods. Folks, I'm telling you, you're going to want to pay attention tonight because he's going to be dropping some tactical nukes. Yeah, not literally. These days you can say anything and they get you thrown off of here. Just want to remind you, this weekend coming up October 17th through the 19th, Mountain Readiness. It is going to be the shiznit, folks. Remember, I go to a lot of these things. I was at Homesteaders of America last week. I'll be at Mountain Readiness this week. I'll be in Dallas next week. And then weeks after that, you know, it's that time of year where we're constantly on our bicycle. Anyway, it is the best festival you don't know about. I guarantee it. If you want some real deal training, that's where you're going to want to be. Following, as I mentioned a moment ago, Healing for the Ages, that's going to be out there. I'm going to have Dr. Ely back on next week. And maybe I'll drop another couple of N-bombs for everybody out there that is easily offended. Because as the shirt says, we all now. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Perma will get you 30% off of that anyway if you want to attend virtually or even be there in person. Richardson Nutrition. Perma will get you 10% off of there. Remember, they supply a bunch of stuff that I'm not allowed to tell you what it does in this platform. Not when we're live, y'all. That's the problem of doing live YouTube. And I can't even put this on permaculture, you know, the regular Pimpcast channel. Folks, for a whole bunch of things that we're likely to get into, we're on our second strike, so we got to do it on William's channel on our backup. But it doesn't really matter because our biggest platform, without a doubt, is the audio platform. So everybody, just stay tuned for that. And then finally, Wave Watch. Billy 100 will get you $100 off of that one. And folks, I told you about what it does and what it does for me. It's not this other device I got here on my wrist right now. This one is a little trial that I'm working on right now. I know I made a little confusion last time. This isn't a watch. It looks like one. I'm going to shine it into the camera here so you can see it. No, this thing mitigates supposedly EMFs and a lot of negative RF radiation out there. So, folks, I'm giving it the old college try. Got the whole house set up with this thing. And so far, I am actually going through something of a Herx reaction, if that ain't crazy enough, folks. I'm dead serious. A full-blown Herx reaction, and I'll maybe cover that in later episodes. Well, anyway, with that said, I don't want to mess around. I handled all the business up front, and I'm looking at what appears to be the Terminator on the end of my screen. Hakeem, how you doing, my man?
What's going on, man? Billy, it's good to be back, man.
Good to be here. I mean, good to be here with you, bro. I'm seeing you got, what are those blue light blockers you got on, too?
Yeah, I got blue blockers from Midwest Red Light Therapy, man. I just saw you wearing yours. You look so cool. I was like, all right, I got to put mine on. Solidarity. Bro, you know?
Hey, you know what time it is, man. I got to – these days, man, with what I'm finding out and, you know, doing a little bit of research before you got back on, man, I wish you could hear the conversations I've had with Hakeem offline, because he covers – I mean, the guy is not just wicked smart in what he does, but also with all these other things that are off the beaten path, man, you really put my feet onto a lot of healing modalities that I didn't think about until you kind of led me that way, man. So what's new in your world these days?
Oh, man, so much. You know, I've spent the last 2 months working on this report that we can get into. And thank you, by the way. I want to say congrats on making it past your 365th episode. That's awesome. You got one for every day of the year. No, everything's been good. I mean, for those of you who don't know who I am, I'm the founder of Take Backward Tech. I help people use their technology with more privacy, more freedom. And then as I share with Billy, the interest in bioenergetics, right? All these subtle elements that we don't know are contributing to our health. And if you ignore those things, you're going to, you know, you're going to have a bad time later down the line. So yeah, I enjoyed those offline conversations with you too, man. We need to pick that up soon.
Yeah, bro, no doubt about that. I mean, good night, man. It's blown me away with, you know, it's shocking to me that the most impactful information isn't widely distributed at all. It's like, you know, it's through conversations, or albeit, for example, this weekend coming up, Mountain Readiness, I'll have a conversation with a guy that was a Green Beret in Vietnam. Saw the war now, at the time couldn't, but sees it for what it is now, and then will tell you all these profound lessons that he learned that you're never going to see in a book. You're never going to see in any other way than just being across the table from somebody, man. So it's a real joy. I can't wait to be in the same place with you, my man. So right out of the gates, bro, for the people that don't know who you are, why don't you give us a brief background on, you know, what brought you to this space and what you're up to?
Yeah, so I started my journey right before the pandemic in 2019. By that time, I was a software engineer. I worked for many different companies, including big tech companies. I was working in New York City, and I just saw the whole world flip right up on its head in 2020. And luckily, I had connected with a cat, Derek Bros. Some of you might know that name. He's the founder of the Freedom Cell Network. And Derek asked me, "Hey, man, I see you build websites. Do you want to help with this one?" And so I said, "Yes, of course." And so I quit my job. I moved back home and I started helping him with this. And then what do you know? Next year, all this crazy stuff happens in 2020 and the site just blows up. And I found myself to be the voice of, you know, to have a voice on this platform. And it was great because for the first time in my life, I was connected with all these people who were pulling their money out of the banks, you know, putting food in the ground, educating their own kids. But the problem was, is they were using big tech services to run their companies. You know, they were putting all their personal information on Google, Apple, and all these bad eggs. So I decided to do something about it, and I kind of dedicated my life there to studying online privacy and security, and been releasing solutions ever since. So I do the educational stuff at takebackertech.org, and then we also built a privacy company where we do privacy phones, laptops, and communication services. That is at abovephone.com, and I do think we have a collaboration with you, don't we, Billy?
Yeah, I had it up on the screen a moment ago, and I was thinking, I mean, Denise, who monitors this show, and by the way, I want to give a hat tip to Renewed Homestead. Y'all go over there and check them out. She had it up here on the board. I'm not sure. I was like, man, she's really good, man, because I don't know how she found this thing, but I don't know if this promo code still fits, but it's on the screen right now if you're able to see it. I don't know if that's still good, so I didn't want to say anything until...
No, so it works. Everything's good with that.
Okay, cool. All right, well, I'll just leave that up there for now. Man, we are in, there's so many conversations I want to have with you, and half of which that I know you are definitely qualified to talk about, I can't even have on this platform, or they would go ahead and pull the tube. That's part of the problem of being live in some of these things, is that in the audio platform alone, I can just ask you anything, we can, you know, ham it out, and I don't care who's offended. But right now, there are certain things I'm just going to have to leave on the shelf because we are on our second strike. Strangely enough, it was Barbara O'Neill that got me my second. Actually, it was my third strike.
What did she say?
She brought up an element on the periodic table that might, that will almost certainly improve your sense of smell, provided you lost it. And it's like I said, it's an element on the periodic table. And
it's crazy. It begins with
Z and ends with N in the periodic table. So anyway, yeah, she brought that up. And then I had another guy from Cultivate Elevate talked about how you can extract heavy metals from your body just by eating certain things and how they chelate this stuff out of you. It's astonishing to me what we can't talk about, but
is it the solutions part? Like where they say, all right, take this. And that's what gets flagged. Cause we're on YouTube now. Actually, I decided, you know, I've been trying to do my content on alternative platforms and it's great, but you know, there's not that many people on there. So we just created a YouTube channel. So this is crazy. So if you say the actual solution on a YouTube video, you get struck.
Bro, they will. I mean, technically, they must have forgot one of them because I should be technically kicked off right now because of what I have in this glass right now. You know, it's something that helps with a whole lot of stuff out there. And
it's not pee, is it?
No, it begins with chlor, and I can't say any more than that. Otherwise, yeah. So, bro, just
could have recognized it.
Yeah. So, just know that if you say any of these things. I mean, you can get in here and talk about some of the craziest things in the world, but the second you talk about real solutions and things that we know actually help people, all of a sudden, they're either going to shadow ban you or they're just going to go ahead and give you a strike, bro, for anything that actually works. But, hey, we're not really worried about it. I'm going to stay around those topics tonight, but we'll definitely have to get you back for another time because I'm sitting here thinking as I'm looking at my notes, I'm like, man, there's so many things I want to ask and I got to take off half of them because I already know that they're going to strike them down. So folks, these are not free platforms, bottom line. So Hakeem, I'm just going to jump right into it, bro. There's so much out there, but I'll stay within the confines of what I think they'll let me get away with.
Okay. But
just to kind of set the whole thing up right now. You know, bro, I know this is your a speciality along with a number of other things, but most people already think privacy's dead. Why should they even fight for it anymore?
Yeah. I mean, that's a common thing, right? To be black-pilled about privacy. And you might even start believing it, but then start looking at some of the people who are the heads of these big tech companies. who is it? Sergey Brin, the... you know, ex co-founder of Google. And I believe one of the co-founders of Google was called up to speak on the Epstein case and he was on his private island. They couldn't find him. You think he has a phone? No way. No way. I think it was Mark Zuckerberg too, who talked about his kids and whether he would get them phones. He was not going to get them phones. Right. So these big players, as you might think, is they know the value of privacy. And that's why all of these products are free. And you might think privacy is dead, but really it's you're giving your privacy away by consent. So it might be the phone you use. It might be the social media platform, might be the laptop. But as soon as you cut that company out of the equation, right, because they're giving you that product for free, that means they're making way more money off of you. So as soon as you cut them out of the equation, you do get your privacy back. I do think that people can get privacy in today's day and age. And we're actually seeing that with some of the things that Google has been doing this year. This year, they announced that in 2 years, 2027, people with normal Google phones won't be able to run non-approved apps. So they just won't be able to run it. There will be a digital fracturing where here I've got my fancy de-Googled phone that helps with EMF, and I'll be able to run whatever app I want. But if you have an Android phone, you're not actually going to be able to run any app that's not approved by Google and that the developer didn't hand their ID card to Google and say, hey, Google, here's total control of my app. So that's what's happening because I think these big tech companies are realizing there is a growing movement of people taking back their privacy. So it can be done. And these companies are scared that you will act on it.
So what's the real cost of carrying, like, of everybody I know out there, the only one that carries, I guess, a dumb phone that I know of is Joel Salatin. Everybody else carries a smartphone or some derivation of it. So what is the real cost of a normal smartphone today? I mean, what is it costing all of us in terms of personal liberty?
It is costing you, one, your sanity, because everything on the phone, especially social media, is tuned to stress you out. I mean, that's the whole point of it. If you are on social media, you'll notice this with, if you like a certain post that's maybe a little bit right-leaning or about something, then you see the most extreme versions of that. Or you get the opposite. You see some lefty woke crap that is pissing you off. And it's done that way on purpose. That creates engagement. That creates emotion. So all of these things play on our emotion just to stress us out. Because when we're stressed out, we don't actually focus on productive things. So you get peace of mind. That's the number one thing. Also, when you use a de-Googled phone, like the above phone, there's no ads, right? So that adds on to the peace of mind layer. I'm sure you've experienced this. You're sitting at dinner. You're talking about something, talking about a tractor or something, some attachment you want. You go home, next thing you see is the ad. Well, that's because they are listening through the microphone. They've all but admitted it now. And this is a advertising grid that's not just on your phone. It's on your laptop. It's on your web browser. It follows you around. So imagine that. Someone's watching your every single move. And they're building this data to build a profile on you, which I can tell stories from the 80s when they were using this type of data to predict when women were pregnant, and they would find out that these women were pregnant, and they would go to confirm their findings, and they'd actually find out they knew before the woman did, based on what they were buying, right? So this data is extremely, extremely powerful. And so you could just start by cutting them off. And I think there's really good solutions today. We've had this company for 5 years, so we know the best way, to do de-Googled phones and to get you all the functionality you might need on them. So the value of your privacy, it's like everything in your life. Also, another thing to remember, like doing this digital ID report, which I'd love to talk with you about today, is I studied every continent, like 6 continents, except Antarctica. I didn't study Antarctica. But dude, I know way too much about it. And what I got reminded of was this carrot and the stick phase. Right. First is the carrot. We saw this during a few years ago when, they wanted you to do something and they were like, here's a free donut. Here's a free fries. And then you got the stick. So we're about to see that again with digital ID. And the reason this ties into your privacy is because everything will be based on this digital ID. And if you're using a big tech phone, it's just going to be like, they're just going to hand you off to that system. So that's the main danger coming ahead. We're not at the stick phase yet, but you can get prepared now.
No, you can already see it happening. I mean, like it was Doc Malik who just did a recent, he's in the UK, actually in Scotland. And he's talking about, man, people are so pissed off, man. They're burning down 5G towers, the whole 9 yards are talking. I mean, they just come out and said, hey, this is the way it's going down. And it won't be that long before it happens here in the United States of amnesia. But before we get into that, though, I want to ask you, because I don't think all of us know the full extent of it. To your point, I'm going to ask a question here, but to your point, you just made me think of something. I'm on Twitter. At first it was going okay. And then all of a sudden, it's like over the last week, it just completely changed. Now all I see, and I've been very vocal on my position with Israel and the genocide in Gaza and the whole 9 yards. I've been very vocal about that. And then to your point, at first it was showing me things that were congruent with what I've already written there. And now over the last week, it has done a 180, and it was all the people that Netanyahu and the rest of them have funded. Now they are, I mean, these are people I'm not even subscribed to, bro. Yeah. And they're popping up in my feed, and it's like there to just totally piss me off. So I'm like, okay, I'll just turn it off. Unlike a lot of these other hoople heads out there, I know how to turn this thing off. I don't need it. And I know I'm being shadow banned. I know other people that think like me are being shadow banned. You know, even on YouTube, I do a front porch talk. Gets up to 7,300 comments. I can tell this thing is about to go parabolic, and then bam, stops right there. No more traffic because I might wake somebody up. And then we see a brown person like me where I'm not red state or blue state. I'm saying it's the state against you. Well, they can't have that see the light of day. But with all that said, let me kind of circle back a little bit and ask. And you made me think of it just a moment ago. I'm just curious, how much data is the average person giving away without even knowing it, just by having these phones?
So just on the operating system level alone, there's about 12 gigabytes a day from everyone in North America that uses Android phones. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, but that's every day. And these are based on studies that were done in 2020, right? That's just the operating system then, which has a bunch of logs and texts and stuff. They know what you're doing with your clock app. They know where you're traveling around to. The location is a really big part of it too. Where if you turn on the location service at your home, it'll send off the address of your device and then all of the other devices in your Wi-Fi and tie that with the location.
What?
Yeah. That's Apple phones are doing that. Google doesn't even need to do that because they drive around and collect that information. But it's really hard to quantify it. So the apps are another layer as well. And it turns out most apps, when I used to develop mobile apps, the first thing after you publish your app would someone they would find your email somehow and they say, we saw you published an app. Hey, you want to put our software development kit in there? We'll give you analytics and stuff and we'll pay you, right? It turns out that most of these companies are owned by Alphabet, which is Google's parent company. It's either that, them, or Verizon, or Amazon, or one of these big companies, right? So they have control of every vertical, and it's getting to the point where here's another thing to mention, right? There's almost no way to measure, because if you give an app a permission to the microphone, then these third-party companies I'm talking about, they also get that same permission, right? So it could be pulling up your entire thoughts throughout the day and sending them out. It just really depends on the app. You have to do a study per app. But I would bet over the course of your lifetime, I would say you give about 500 gigabytes a year, which is a ton.
Bro, I think these things are so nefarious. I've said it before. I don't think I've ever said it publicly, but since when do I care about what anybody thinks about me? I swear this thing can read my mind sometimes. And I'm not the only, I've said this in private conversations before. There was an old timer I can't even remember where I was when he said it. And then I was like, man, there have been times where I've actually thought about something and then opened the phone later. I mean, I don't know. Maybe DARPA's got something like that. Maybe they're actively using it. Are you even? I know that's a little bit in the gray area.
I hear that from everyone.
Really?
I hear that from almost every person I talk to. So you're not alone, one. And I can kind of speculate on why I think it is, but there's two things that could be happening there. One is like subliminal planting. So they plant the information before and they actually like make you think of it. And then they show it to you again later. That's what I hope is happening. If there is a way to read your thoughts, which I didn't think they were there yet. I thought we had to wait till Apple Vision Pro. They've got the EEGs on the Apple Vision Pro. Mm-hmm. They also have patents for the AirPods as well. So that's when I think like you'll get real time thoughts and stuff. But yeah, like I hear that from everyone. They think their phone is reading their thoughts. And I wish I had experiences to share because I don't get ads. So
yeah, because you're smart. You got outside the matrix, no doubt about that. But hey, when you jack in, let me know if you have the same results. Hey, this one is a question. It's a little bit sideways, but it has come up before. Now, one of the last things Julian Assange talked about before they locked his butt away for a decade was this magic dust. And a lot of people assume that that's what he was talking about, what they're dropping from these planes in the sky. And we've talked about it. Talked to Dane Wigington, a pretty good friend of mine, and a number of others who are in this space. And he talked about this magic dust. And that was the last thing he wrote before they locked him up. Do you have any thoughts on that before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, that is a pretty scary possibility. And I've read a little bit about the nanotech and the graphene quantum dots, which I don't want to get you your third strike, but yeah, it's possible. Like I never want to give them more power than they can prove, but it's definitely possible. And then the smart dust thing is a real thing, you know, it's a military program. So they can spray that and they can track the location of it. You might say that might be why here's something actually I feel like we could chat about. Have you noticed when you do like a freedom event or a self-sufficiency event, even though there might not be chemtrails for a while, just that very day of the event, there are some. I've had that experience maybe one or two times for different events, and that's like that's a proper application of smart dust. That's when you would use it, you know.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm going to have to think back, because I'm sure, I mean, bro, here as of late, until this government shutdown, I mean, they were spraying us every single day. We've had three solid days of almost, and I say almost blue because they're still spraying that garbage at night. But anyway, maybe the fun isn't there.
You just made it click for me. I was wondering, I was like, the past week, I've been like, I would like, just thank God. No trails today. And it's the government shutdown. Wow, dude.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can, I mean, Thomas Massie brought it up before, and when he said it, I was like, well, I'm glad it's happening where you are, and then all of a sudden, I pay attention every single day, bro. I'm a farmer. I look up at the sky every day, and the last 3 days, it's been absolutely, it's not as blue as it was after that engineered hurricane they sent through western North Carolina, which it was the bluest blue I'd seen since I was a child. Yeah. Now it's close, because they're still doing it at night. Maybe they just don't have the funding to do it during the day. But anyway, wanted to make sure I'd ask that question. But let me get into the meat and potatoes of why I really, really was excited about having you on, because one of my big sticks that I talk about on this program is education, and how I'm, even though I put my son through public school, I didn't know then what I know now. Had I had the benefit of hindsight, I would have done differently. And folks, I will say, before I'm about to ask Hakeem my next question, remember what Malcolm X said: only a damn fool would allow his enemy to educate his child. And when I'm talking about that damn fool, I'm talking about the education, the compulsory education system in the first place. I mean, most teachers I've come across are morons. I know there's some good ones, but I've come across mostly morons. Dead serious. Yeah. There are exceptions, but mostly morons that are willing to be spoon-fed and do whatever the powers that shouldn't be tell them. Now, Hakeem, I remember during the height of COVID, my niece was down here, and at the time she was in, I'd say, junior high, and they handed her this tablet, and that's how all the kids were doing all their work on these tablets. Now, knowing what I know now, and knowing the work of Dr. Jack Cruz, I'm realizing that the worst thing you can do to a child these days is give them a computer, especially without the ability to block the blue light that's coming off of it, especially after midday. That's another story altogether. But she was absolutely positively transfixed on this. And my wife had seen her recently and still just glued to a device the whole time. Yeah. What is going on with the schools and the surveillance that's going on there? Because how did they just automatically come up with the funding to hand all these kids iPads?
Yeah, there's this program called ESSER. And honestly, this story is so unbelievable to me. I went back and traced the funding. And schools during the pandemic, they got $180 billion. There was only one, so this ESSER program from the federal government, and the intention was, oh no, we're locked down. We need to make sure the kids learn. Okay, here's what, all right, schools, do whatever you need to do. Here's $180 billion. And I've drilled all the way down to like school districts, like even small schools were getting like $1.5 million. Right? You'd have to be really far out there to not get much money. They had so much money, they didn't know what to do with it. They literally had to come up with ways, because the only restriction was, hey, you need to spend this money by the ESSER shutdown, which was, I think, September 2024. So out of the blue, it's like, you know that meme with that dude in the yellow suit, and he's like this? So dude, Google and the boys and this whole industry of educational technology just exploded overnight. And they had a field day, because now everyone is studying remotely, or they had a device in class. Now, this one device per child program, it has an interesting route. I think the first program in the United States that was one device, one child was in Maine. And I want to say it was the governor. Yeah, the governor of Maine who talks about, he talked with someone at the MIT Media Lab, and this person was doing, I'm forgetting their name, I shouldn't have, but they did a One Device, One Child program for the poorest places in the world, like Kenya, and they created a company around it where they would send out a laptop out there. And they said that, all right, people, now these kids would learn much faster, even though that wasn't the case. It really wasn't useful. The devices would break down. There was no support, all these things. And so this cat, he got funded by the United Nations Sustainable Development Fund for his startup, right? So, and again, it's the MIT Media Lab that, you know, that was part of the startup, which, guess who funded the MIT Media Lab? Partly Jeffrey Epstein, right? So it's a small game at the top. And so this was the first program in the United States that started doing this, and everyone followed suit. So now Google is, they sold at least 1 million Chromebooks a year. There were so many devices being sold, and this created a panopticon for students where they're sitting in a classroom and the teacher had the ability to go and look at any of their screens, right? If they're goofing around, they could lock them in, but they had visibility into everything. So now teaching is completely disconnected. The teacher just has to say, all right, hey, this is the lesson plan for today. Go ahead and review it on your tablet. I'm just going to sit here and monitor you and police you. And not only that, the party doesn't stop at after class ends. They can do the same thing when the kids are sitting at home. So that's one of the more dangerous things, is like whoever's at the school or IT department they can watch what your kids do.
Yeah, that's even especially scary. I mean, you have all these freakazoids in the public school systems, and what if that kid takes the iPad, let's say, into the bathroom? They want to listen to music or whatever. It could be some freak over here watching some little girl undress. Or, I mean, who even knows, bro? If they got that kind of access, who even knows what they're doing with it?
Yeah, and I've looked at a few of the different products that are out there. There's one, so a lot of these are safety products, and typically what they will do is, you know, it's remote access. So you can see what they're doing at any time. You can go onto their screen and just make sure, all right, is this person, are they a risk to themselves or others? They can check that kind of stuff. And there were tools like Gaggle, which I was reading how the software changes, and they recently said they've removed the ability to view the student's webcam, which is like, why was that ability on there in the first place? You know, like what could you possibly be doing with that if you're monitoring? So there's a lot of insidious stuff going on, and it's very complex to go and research this, right? Every school district, every state is different, but I counted there's something like 1,700 different educational technology companies. So that is what happens when you just let your child at home just use whatever technology they use at school. I will say this year, so we have a Linux laptop called the AboveBook. We have mothers in our company, right? So their kids are using the AboveBook. And one of them said that he started going with his Linux laptop. And, the teacher saw it and she said, all right, go speak to the IT lady. So he went down the hall and he went into like the IT cave. And this lady looked at it. She's like, oh, okay, what's this? Oh, so he just told her, yeah, it's a Linux laptop. Look what it can do, all this stuff. And she was like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. And then she set up whatever she needed to for the school's website. And that was that. He could start using it. And this young man is now, he's in middle school. He's still in middle school. So sometimes it's literally that easy, saying, hey, I'm not going to use your device. I brought my own laptop. Let me use this.
Well, I can definitely see the utility for a lot of this stuff, but man, at the same time, anything that has any kind of tentacles left to the government, I know will always be abused. No doubt about that. I just wonder where this leads, and I'm starting to wonder, man, are books going to be extinct here before long? I mean,
they already are.
They are. I mean, they're almost like kryptonite to a dummy. they really are. I'm just wondering, you know, when I went to school, of course, you know, I'm older. You know, we had backpacks, we had books and stuff like that, but man, there's something about reading something on a printed page as opposed to just seeing your whole world, everything unfold right here in these laptops. And then when I see young people like my niece, I'm like, good night, dude. She can't even sit down and eat a meal and not put the phone down or the iPad. I mean, and how her parents are letting her get away with this, I don't even understand. It's like they're sitting here at a restaurant eating and you're holding your phone at the same time. I'm like, okay, man, there is definitely something. This seems like the Ring of Mordor in so many different ways. I can see how this thing can be so easily.
It's technology addiction at its most deepest levels. And I've been there. I was a kid. I got my first laptop at 11 years old. I've been down that road and, you know, I got addicted to video games. Now, when I was growing up, these things weren't designed to be that addictive. I can't imagine growing up today. Now, just because I know this is important to you, right? You're seeing all these kids growing up glued to these screens. It's almost like you have to treat it like an alcoholic because they'll freak out. I mean, you've seen those videos too, right? Where the baby has his tablet and you take it away, throws a tantrum. Like it's literally like an addiction, heroin, like alcohol. It's in the same ballpark. And that is because of the dopamine loop that these apps now, the TikTok and YouTube, the little shorts that they do. So it's a very interesting psychological gamble, right? Like a gambler, it's not actually getting the result, getting the jackpot that is when researchers study it, that's not the toppest part of the dopamine spike. It's before. It's kind of the like rolling, the action of rolling. You don't know what's going to happen, the uncertainty. And so the way that translates to these apps is like the next piece of content. Is it going to be good? Let me swipe. And that that dopamine loop has shrunk from these large videos down to these 15-second clips, right? So that's why it's so powerful. They're just you go to the casino, you see those old people at the slot machines, same thing.
Man, this is I mean, I don't know how much we can actually get into this, but man, when you break down a lot of the work that Jack Cruz has talked about, how the whole thing with these blue lights all began with the mafia back in Vegas. And people couldn't understand when Vegas first came around, why on earth would these Jewish mobsters put a casino out in Vegas? It makes no sense, until they realized, And then DARPA and the CIA figured it out that, man, these blue lights make you highly suggestible, especially when you're looking at them past the time where you would actually get blue light in the natural environment. So nobody could seem to understand why Obama got rid of all the incandescent lights. It didn't make sense. They're telling us, well, you know, it's going to save power, which as a journeyman electrician, I can tell you is absurd. If I do an energy audit on your house, your lights are the least things we got to worry about. So come to find out all these years later, oh, now it all makes sense, because when you have just straight LEDs or CFL bulbs, you're only getting blue light out there. So that makes you 10 times more. What the mob figured out back in the 40s is that this blue light with no interaction with outside light, when you just have blue light all by itself, makes you highly suggestible. Well, all of these screens, if you're on them all the time, and of course, like you said, they make these, they design these apps to be addictive. Add that into the blue light, and now you got a freaking disaster, man. And then you got all these kids out here. I mean, you got, I mean, folks, I'm not trying to get too descriptive here, but even NPR was talking about all these kids that are now having to take Viagra because they got limp noodles. They're sitting in here beating that thing like it owes them money because they're sitting here looking at blue light watching porno. This is crazy.
Man, you just you had the final puzzle piece there. I didn't even, you know, I knew that blue light was a thing, but I didn't realize that connection. Now it makes total sense. The whole thing is a weapon, but instead of killing you, it robs you of your of being young, which is really sad. And this is something that I've gone through. You know, I've gone through technology addiction, and I really think that if it continues happening like this, like there's going to be a large segment of society that's just not going to talk to each other. They're just completely isolated. Everything will be online. I think right now the statistics are kids are spending 8 hours a day on their computers just for school. that's not after school, right? Wow. So it's just so much. It reminds me of one thing I'm like being called to say is Iboga, or the drug that you use to get over an alcohol addiction or a heroin addiction. And it's very effective. And it's telling me to just talk about Ibogaine right now. But it does do a full brain reset. And I'm feeling like if you do have a child that is completely addicted to these devices, you might have to use something like that. That would be maybe a quicker solution. Damn it. Here I am presenting solutions again. I'm sorry, Billy.
Yeah, they said we're getting buffered now. All of a sudden, they said, yeah, they people we're are buffered. Writing a check. They're having, we didn't have any problems until we started talking about solutions. I'll tell you, speaking of solutions, I'll go ahead and put this one out there. One, NPR also did another experience. I listen to NPR because I want to know what my enemy. I also listen to Fox News because I want to know what my enemies think. So I pay attention to all of them. They were talking about, and I couldn't even believe this made the light of day. They were talking about this experiment of all these kids that were in college, of course, grew up with cell phones, the whole nine yards, and they unwittingly put them into this experiment where they dropped them off in the woods. They had a control. They had, you know, three different experiments going on. And the ones that did best as far as removing their tech addiction, now they didn't know they were going to take their phones away from them. And there were ones that didn't even give up the phones. So sooner or later, it ran out of battery power and, you know, you were SOL. So whether you liked it or not, you didn't have a phone. But they were finding that the ones who made the transition past the addiction fastest were the ones that they had in nature, the ones that were outside, not the ones that they had in a antiseptic location or something like that. But then Dr. Cruz also talks about one of the fastest ways, you know, just get back to nature. But good luck when you got these things glued at your hip the whole time. Or if you're going to be in the company of these things, you offset it with red light. That's another conversation altogether. But yeah, man, I know we're kind of getting along in the tooth here, but I want to talk about some of this other digital ID stuff, bro, because I know you're the consummate expert on a lot of this stuff. And I know so many people want to hear about it.
Can I just applaud you for bringing that back up again with the solution? And if that is what, I mean, you're totally right, like back to nature. And this is why like normal rehab doesn't work, right? They cut the drugs away, but they're stuck in a room. They're imprisoned, right? That's got to be agony.
That's right.
And I mean, maybe for the entrepreneur out there, if you're seeing this a lot in your society, it's just a nature trip, a nature retreat for kids with phone addiction. That's what we need.
To your point, that's why the ones, and I didn't know it at the time, but that's why the ones that were institutionalized, they weren't technically institutionalized. They didn't recover at all for the most part because they were still in a blue lit environment. They were in an antiseptic environment with unnatural lighting. There's a Sarasota school experiment. Everybody should go and check it out. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube. There was a guy who used to work for Disney, and he did this, and this is back in the 70s, bro, that he did this experiment. Had a classroom, and all they had were the fluorescent lights that were in this classroom. And you had some kids in there. They were losing their minds. They were acting up. And then he recorded them after turning the lights off and opening the windows. And when you have windows, you should always leave your windows cracked to a certain extent because it's going to, through the photoelectric effect, it will allow all the beneficial light rays to get in there. It's longer than I can explain right now. But the point being, he re-recorded this, and the same kids that were hyperactive and impossible to control, the second they turned off the lights and opened the windows, these kids were fully attentive, paying attention, not hyperactive, none of that stuff. They were perfectly fine as soon as they brought them closer to nature. So there's something to be said here. And then honestly, there are, you know, EMF concerns with a lot of these things. And, you know, I heard you in a previous interview talk about how you're working, which, bro, talk about an applause line, man. I think you definitely need it when you're actually proactively thinking about ways to mitigate some of the EMF problems that come with these phones. I may have a solution for you, by the way. I'll talk to you about that offline. But yeah, man, I want to let's kind of dig on over this digital ID stuff, man, because people are freaking out about it. And I think rightly so, mostly because I think most of us are ignorant. Now, how seriously, I guess I need to ask you as an expert, how serious is this threat of biometric surveillance? You know, when I remember when I got that phone a while back, it's asking for your fingerprint, your face ID, iris scans. I mean, bro, before I retired from the electric trade, I can't even tell you how many times I've worked in so many data centers, built I don't even know how many data centers, and they're still being built like nobody's business. And had a discussion with an engineer, a friend of mine that I actually came up in the trade with, that told me a story that made the hair on the back of my neck pop up. But I got to ask you as an expert, I mean, what are your thoughts on this biometric surveillance that's going on out there? Is this something to be concerned about?
If COVID was like the prequel, this is the main event. This is the main event. And I tried really hard to find countries that were not pursuing this. I'll give you two. The first one is Antarctica. It's obvious why there's no digital ID program in Antarctica. The second is Suriname, which is a country next to Brazil. It's the Amazon rainforest. Mm-hmm. It's like lawless there. So these are the types of countries that are not pursuing a digital ID. And I'm grouping digital ID into its prerequisites as well. Before you can have digital ID, you need an electronic ID with biometric scanning. Now, people think in America that we don't have this. Well, guess what? The real ID is it's not formally an electronic ID, but when people were forced to renew it because of the TSA requiring this real ID, some states started requiring biometrics. California was one of them, Texas, Wyoming, Florida, oddly enough, more of the freedom states, right? And so I know people who had to go through this personally, and you know, there was one option: be illegal or don't renew your ID or enroll in biometrics. So even America is building its foundation for digital ID. And once you have the electronic ID with the biometrics, you don't need to do anything else. There's nothing more they need from you. They can issue the digital ID, right? Because your biometrics are the master key. And from there, they can issue it to you. They can put you in their system. And then it's up to you if you want to interact with the system or not. But they can do that. And so that's what we see in different countries. But let me step back for a second and say that I see digital ID already being available or is about to be available in about 90% of countries. The only countries that aren't either have millions of undocumented people already, or they're too war-torn, like Iran and Yemen, to really be able to do something about it. So you have to pause and think, when the entire world is going this direction, why? It's because this is the last chapter as this will be the network that controls every aspect of your life. It'll be the basis for your social credit score or your carbon credit score or your freedom to travel. So to add on a little bit more, what I did was I studied the programs in six continents. I just got back from the EU as well, and I got to see their entry-exit system. I traveled around in the EU, and I left the day before that thing came back online. And dude, it's like some sci-fi shit coming back from that. It's like this booth. It's called automated border control. And basically, once you step into it, it closes behind you and you're locked in. And in front of you is just a giant camera. And it's just like, if you're tall, it'll go like, and like lock onto your face and then scan you. And then if there's a problem, you know, the gates don't open. Like you're stuck. You're stuck in there. And most of the time, it's fine. They got you in their system. So the gates open back up and you go through it. So now that's in the EU. That's already in places like Japan and China and the UK. And it's already here in America, too. We just don't have the fancy systems for it. For foreigners, for US citizens, we don't have to do that. But because so much of the world is moving in this direction, we really need to make this our last stand to not enroll ourselves in digital ID. We also need to make promises with our local community that we will never put a wall up between us based on digital ID. And so that's what I'm going around. I just want to teach people how digital ID works.
Bro, I'm on pins and needles because years ago, I remember when Ron Paul ran for president and they laughed at him for his response when they were talking about a wall, a border wall. And he was getting to run around, never got a fair shake. The only guy I thought was worthy to be president. But anyway,
me too.
He said something in the presidential debate when they asked him about, you know, securing the border or putting up a wall, because this conversation had been in the American zeitgeist for a long, long time. And he said something I will never forget. And you just made me think of it just by on the basis of what you said, what's happening there in the UK. He says, you better be real careful about what walls you put up because it could be used to keep you in. And everybody yeah. laughed him to scorn. I didn't laugh because I was like, huh, this is a wise man, wicked smart. I wonder what he knows. And now they were laughing then. It doesn't seem like such a joke now.
Yeah. No, it's yeah.
Go ahead, bro.
It's real, man. And he nailed it. And you know, the ICE has gotten more money than a military budget to do things like this. So the walls are kind of built up around it. And I have to wonder, I haven't been to the border in a while, but I have a friend who's going recently, and I wonder what it is like now going down into Mexico. We don't have very many places to travel here in America, but this digital wall is the next thing that's coming. And so I looked at places like there's a story to be told in every continent. Africa, which is just kind of at the beginnings of their program, they're working on just documenting people. So like the World Bank is giving countries like Nigeria $500 million. Here you go. Just try and identify your people. And so that's happening, right? That's like the prequel. Then there's countries in the EU where they have this interoperable standard. And so digital ID, I think it's important to give it a definition. Here's my definition from looking at a lot of different programs. It is a identification system that is electronic and can be interoperable with different systems inside the country or outside the country. So for the example of inside the country, Australia's digital ID system, it works for anywhere within the country. It's soon going to be able to be used with banks and retailers versus the EU system, which is going to be interoperable anywhere in the world. So when we're talking about digital ID, this is not just like, hey, this is a U.S. problem and we got to deal with it. No, this is a digital ID that will track you as you move to other countries, which is the wow. crazy part. It's designed to be interoperable and to share information. And so what it is, and I got another question, is it's essentially all the information you have about you, your name, address, date of birth, sex, all that kind of stuff. It's a system that lets you verify either all the information or pieces of that information to anyone who asks. And when you present that credential, they call it, they'll be able to check whether it was issued by the U.S. government or wherever you came from. So in a nutshell, that's digital ID. It's going to look like an app on your phone, and it's coming soon. So if you want to avoid it, you need to opt out and you need to build local networks.
Well, you got my head, dude. I'm telling you, we could talk for hours because based on my background, having worked and built a number of these data centers, mm-hmm. I remember working at the Facebook data center in Arlington, Texas. And prior to that, I was actually running one of the biggest at that time in Kansas City, one of the biggest data centers over there. We were building it. And then the Facebook data center in Arlington absolutely dwarfed what was once yeah. the biggest one around there. And they were telling us back then, man, I could tell you some freaky stories that showed up there. And that weirdo Zuckerberg showed up there. I swear that dude is a freaking alien for real, man. Saw him from a distance and he had these big monkeys up here walking around with him, I guess afraid that somebody might attack him. But anyway, bro, they said there was enough storage capacity in just that one data center. This is one of, five that were on this complex, and I was in one of them. They said there was enough storage capacity in there for all of the world's data like 20 times over. So, and then I'm thinking, bro, we're clearly building our own prisons here.
Yep.
It seems to me. Now, if you had more than enough storage capacity in just that one data center, why is every single I still talk to a lot of guys in the trade, man. They are paying like $20 to $30 in some cases over scale. So if you're already making $60 an hour, you're making $80 an hour or $90 an hour
to do those jobs.
Just to go over here and build these data centers, bro. And for what? If you had to look in your crystal ball, what do you think the end goal is for all this?
It is much worse than George Orwell planned in 1984. And from what I've studied is like, you know, this is just online surveillance. It's the cameras, it's the microphones. they don't know when to stop. They're just going to keep going. So the next frontier is biosurveillance, which is this is a reason why RFK said recently every American should wear a smartwatch. Okay, there you go. You've got heartbeat, you've got blood pressure, you've got a real-time feed of it. That's one element. Then there is the reading your brain waves, which many big tech companies are making a lot of strides on. Meta is working on AI models that can decode your brain waves off of EEGs. So these skater boys who think they're really cool with the Apple Vision Pro headset don't realize that they could contain technology that's literally reading their brainwaves. Soon enough, that will become a feature, and it'll actually be the cool thing to do. It'll be super convenient because you won't have to open your mouth. You'll just think what it is, and it'll, you know, the machine will do that thing for you. So that is the goal eventually, to make us characters in a video game that they can influence on demand, and they can also measure our biochemical reactions, right, to optimize the system. And you know about Microsoft patent 060606.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they just want to gamify the world. They're madmen obsessed with world domination. There's no end to it. That's what I see. And it's like I had this conversation with someone. It's like, when is it going to stop? They're just never going to stop. It's almost like, you know, what do you really do? I think you just let them tire themselves out. They have this sick fantasy and they need to go ahead and go complete it. All you can really do is wake people up and bring them, you know, bring them to God, bring them back to nature. So that's the struggle we have. And we have about 2 years until this digital ID system is like available and present. So we have about 2 years to tell others about digital ID and to make that promise, hey, no matter what happens, you know, whatever you're growing or whatever we're doing, can we make sure that digital ID doesn't get in the way? So those are my thoughts about what we can do about it.
Yeah, well, I know you got some solutions out there, and we're going to cover that, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask you this question regarding like CBDCs or central bank digital currencies and digital ID. I'm going to ask you what I think is probably a stupid question, but I want them to hear from the experts. Do you think they will merge, and how do you see that unfolding?
You know, honestly, from what I've seen, and I haven't done a direct study on CBDCs, but I don't even think they need to. There's not a huge reason they need to yet. Maybe if a currency collapses, it'll be more of a thing. But as soon as the banks are integrated with this digital ID, that system can have all the same functions as CBDC can. You could cancel transactions, you could limit spending, right? So I think they're kind of moving piecemeal, and CBDCs may be the next thing you see after you get enough digital ID adoption. In my research I did, like with digital ID programs, there's no talk about CBDCs. Maybe that's a battle we're going to have to fight in the future.
Okay, the reason I'm asking is it seems as if they're intentionally torpedoing this system that we know is, I mean, you can see that pretty evident in the cost of gold and silver right now. I'm so glad I bought it when it was $23. So it's probably going to become unobtainium here before long, but I'd hate to see what a United States of Amnesia looks like when we got $1,000 silver. So, who even knows what you could do with it? But let's get back to solutions, bro, because I know that's where your heart really lies in so much of this stuff. Because clearly, I mean, we've talked about the problems, but I never like to do a program where we don't offer solutions. And you've thought enough about this to evade a lot of the garbage that's going on with these phones. So why do you, you know, why did you, obviously you answered that why you built the above phone, but what big problem are you trying to solve for the folks out there that are a little bit freaked out right now?
Yeah, we're looking at what a sovereign life looks like without these big tech companies, to still do the things we love every day, stay in touch with families and friends, keep your business, run your business, stay organized, follow the news. What does that look like without a third party parasiting on everything? And to remind ourselves that it's these third parties with these giant market shares and that will eventually automatically install this digital ID on your phone. There's rumors in the UK, which I don't know if I believe them, but that a random digital ID wallet appeared on people's phones. So just think about that for a minute. And I know for a fact that it's technically capable because they did the same thing with contact tracing apps, right? So we're not to the just part where they just force it on us yet, but it's coming and it's possible. So the attempt is, Can we use technology that's completely free from their influence? And so we have this phone called the Above Phone. It's a de-Googled phone. What that means is it uses the same foundational software as Google's Android, but they strip all the Google out of it. And more than that, they add on many security layers. There's many privacy features that you didn't have before. I'm talking about things like being able to create a phone within your phone, so a separate encrypted container. So if you need to use your big tech app, whether that's your Gmail or Facebook Messenger or Instagram or whatever, you can put it on the separate encrypted container so it doesn't actually touch your real phone. And it's actually good for you on a psychological level too, to have that clear separation between social media time and real time, right? So it gives you these solutions and it gives you your power back. Now, we've got Above Phones. And if you want to learn more, I'm doing a webinar at the end of this month, October 29th. So you can join me then. And I'm going to give a complete deep dive of everything that's possible on the phone, how to set it up, how to purchase it. So join me for that webinar. Go to abovephone.com/perma. And you'll see the sign up link at the bottom. Kind of if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see you can go to our Rise Above webinar there. Then you're also able to download the digital ID report. But we've been using these phones for 5 years. We've helped out people, you know, we've helped out 80-year-old grandmas that are now sending, you know, super private crypto transactions. And then we have kids who are 15, 16, getting homeschooled, and this is the first phone their parents decide to give them. And so we've helped thousands of people, and we want to help thousands more. So if you are in the state where maybe your contract is running out and you're able to get a phone, don't get souped up into another contract or upgrade plan. This is the time to opt out, and we're here to help.
Man, that's what I'm talking about, bro. Okay, we got it on the screen right now. Abovephone.com/perma will get you squared away over there. You know, hey, bro, before we bring it to a close here, I just got to ask, because I know a number of people are going to want to know this, but how secure is the encrypted communication on the phone itself? I mean, is it ever compromised? Because honestly, anybody that's interested in your product, that's going to be a chief concern. And I know you kind of answered that, but I just want to put an exclamation point on it.
It's a really good question. And I'll say this phone is leaps and bounds ahead of anything in the market, because for the first time ever, a nonprofit organization has a reason to care about your privacy and security. Whereas Google, Samsung, Apple, and these other guys, I'm speculating here, but they likely get paid to leave back doors open. That's why Pegasus, you guys remember the Pegasus spyware?
Oh, yeah.
They attacked iMessage. They left a zero-click vulnerability, which means that you have to do nothing. They just needed to know your iCloud account, and they could take over your phone. They left that unpatched for 4 years. You're telling me they're not complicit? That's crazy. They did something similar with WhatsApp, right? So these phones have lower-level security improvements that have been released. Like, there's things even in the processor level that are... they're just more strict with memory. They are more strict with what programs, what processes can run on the phone and what memory they can change on the phone. And also, these phones have been proven to not be broken into by the same technology law enforcement uses when they catch a drug dealer. If they have a normal big tech phone, it's not nothing. They could just pull all the data off of it. Same thing if you're at an airport and a customs officer asks to see for your phone. You know, if you're using a normal phone, that data is gone. If you're using our phone, there is no proof that they can pull the data off into it. The companies like Cellebrite, an Israeli startup that does this type of stuff, they have a list of all the phones it works on. Graphene OS on the newest Pixels is not on there. So that is the level of security that you get. They've also been doing more recent updates where you can start to get early security patches. And there is security at every level. So what our company does is, okay, we've got this super secure phone. How do we make it into a product that works? So when you get the phone from us, you have an app store that you can start downloading apps from privately. You've got solutions for video conferencing. You've got an internet phone number, so you can actually have two ways to, you know, two different phone numbers on the phone. And you've got encrypted calls and messages as well. And these are solutions you can start using today. So what our principle is to be completely self-sovereign. We run this open source software on our private data center. And so if you end up getting a phone, which you can go on the link there, you'll see something called Above Suite. And that is our suite of software services we run for people. So just to let you guys know, you know, there's no pressure today. Like, it's not like you have to buy now or anything, but we will have a Black Friday sale coming up. At the end of October, it's going to be a little bit of an early Black Friday sale. So sign up for the webinar. It's just once you get on the page, just scroll down a little bit. It's the Rise Above webinar. I'll explain everything there and you'll get a special offer in person there.
You know, I just got to thinking, man, based on what you said there, if all those people on Jan 6 had these phones, huh? It would have been a whole different story because they found them because they did exactly what you said with all of their Apple or Google phones that they had out there. They just kind of willingly handed over everything. But if they were having an Above phone, well, it would have been a different story, I would imagine.
Yes. You know, we need to be smart. We need to be super smart. And even with this, right, this uses normal cell service. It can work on Wi-Fi. It can work on Wi-Fi, which is great. There's anonymization on Wi-Fi as well. But if you're using cell service, you want to make sure that's anonymous. We also have our own data SIM as well, where we don't hand over your details to the telecom company. But the safest thing you can do is put it on airplane mode. And if it's a big tech phone, just leave it at home. You know, that's not something you want to mess around with. Protests are, you can get messed up at a protest. Yeah. Mm.
Just be smart. All right. So one last question. Is the laptop Linux-based operating system?
Yeah, it is. And we actually wrote our operating system. It's based off of Arch Linux. So Arch Linux is a very advanced form of Linux. Our goal was like, okay, let's take this badass version of Linux and make it so easy that you never have to use the terminal. And it took us about half a year to do it. And we have a really lovely experience now. We took the things we liked from Mac, like the gestures and the slickness of it. And we took the things that made sense from Windows and we left all the other bullshit behind. So this is a laptop that has zero connections to big tech. It's completely open source and you can still get all the software you need. Like, you know, you can kind of see what I'm doing. I do all of my work on these devices. I don't have Apple phones. I don't have other devices that I use. So I'm right there with you. And what I'm really proud of is that it's completely compatible with your office work that you would normally do, right? There's the spreadsheets, the Word documents. We have software on the machine so that it's still compatible. You can still keep doing your work. You can use things like you can use anything from within the web browser. So I think it's a really great laptop for people to try if they've never used a Linux laptop before. I also want to add something else. If you buy a phone or laptop from us, you actually get a 45-minute free call with a support engineer like myself. And we've got a whole team now that will sit on call with you like this. We'll take your old device and your new device and we'll just help you. Hey, what do you need to move over? What do you need to have running on your new device? And you're up to speed super, super fast. On top of that, we do email and chat support 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, and you have that for the lifetime of the device. We really try and do everything in our power to make sure you're using these devices, because some people, they buy it, they put it on the shelf, they don't use it. That means nothing to me, right? If we're going to escape the treachery of digital ID, we're going to be using phones and laptops like this to build our valuable in-person network. That's what I would really love people doing. So we're trying to do everything on our part, and we know you're going to love it if you try it.
Man, you are the man, bro. You broke down a whole lot of things that I've been frankly wanting answers to, and I think a lot of folks out there were wanting the answers to some things as well. Man, I could talk to you forever and a day because I got a whole list of questions I still haven't even gotten to. So we'll have to have you back on here, maybe on Black Eye Friday. Or I think that's what you say, Black Friday.
Black Friday. Did you say Black Guy Friday?
I said Black Eye. Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about the typical Black Friday where you wind up with a black eye. There's so many other tech things. I mean, there's things that are going on with these data centers right now that I know about. I would love to get into it. I spoke to an engineer. He's like the number three guy. Mm-hmm. We came up as apprentices in the trade. He ended up becoming a electrical engineer. And now if I said the name of the company he works for, everybody would know who it is. And he's number three at this company in terms of engineering. And what he told me just in terms of the water usage at some of these, I can't even tell you where it is because I'd end up outing the guy, but the irresponsible use of the water is astonishing to me that, okay, if you're using it in cooling towers, the water shouldn't be contaminated. So it could be recycled and used back over again. He said they just don't even care, dude. They run this water through these data centers, enormous data centers, and then just dump them down the sewer. I'm like, this is absolute. They don't put them through cooling towers and just recycle the water like you would at a power plant. I'm just floored at the irresponsibility of what is going on out there with these data centers, and it's only getting worse.
It's completely evil, and they're not getting like recycled water from the city. They're directly in the aquifer. It's the biggest ecological disaster that, you know, we're living through, and it's I mean, you think about it. Hey, you're using one of their phones and laptops. You're part of the reason why that data center exists to collect all that data. But Billy, I always have a great time, man. You opened my eyes to some things today. I'm going to definitely be looking into Jack Cruz. And I would love to interview for the T-Bot show, too. We do an interview series. I'd love to have you on and hear more about the stuff you're doing with bioenergetics. And I knew you were working on a new solution with Pat Militech and the other gentleman, I'm forgetting his name. I think we'd love to hear about that because that's also a very important technology.
Yeah, bro. It's amazing how all this stuff goes together. And I know you'd be the consummate autodidact. So, man, I always enjoy these conversations. Well, bro, stick around for a second because there's something I want to let you know about that might be of a great blessing to you and what you're doing over there. You know what, Hakeem, tell everybody once again where they can find you.
Hey, guys. Thanks for watching. Many, many love and blessings to whatever you're doing out there. You can find me at takebackourtech.org, or I'm also on Substack. That's tbot.substack.com. I do a weekly show there. And again, if you want to learn more about the phones, go to phone.com/perma. And yes, I will love being here. I can't wait to see you guys again. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, bro, it's always a joy. All right, folks, I know this had to be a blessing to you. Tell everybody to go check this out because this isn't one we can just put on YouTube, you dig? All right, y'all, you know the deal. Until next time, stay alert, stay alive.
From the smallest sprout to the harmony begin in the cycle of life, for the magic's alive to the good.